Well, and they also got involved in restraining orders against one another. There was litigation over the borrowed clothing. A lawsuit was started there to have that clothing returned. What was it? $8,500 worth of clothing that was borrowed?
Hello, welcome to the next episode of Beneath the Law. I'm Gavin Tai, here with my friend Stephen Teal.
Happy to join you, Gavin.
Oh, happy to have you. And you know what? I hope you're not going to write any evil things about me on your social media pages, because they get pretty nasty.
They certainly can. And if I write anything on my social media pages about you, Gavin, that's always going to be positive.
Well, that's very kind. Now, that wasn't the case with respect to a friendship turned sour in Edmonton, where people who were, one of whom was a, referred to themselves as a social media influencer who had, I think it was 16,000 followers on her Instagram account or whatever.
Yes, 16,000.
Not insignificant. Decided to take a bit of a aim at her former friend turned pretty strong enemy. And the case really is, you know, not a couple of things leaped out at me. The case is sort of a testament to just how nasty social media and how acrid that world has become.
Well, and it's a real lesson in terms of what people should be doing and how they need to approach social media accounts, and we can talk about that. There's been a seismic shift in the law of defamation because of the ability of anybody now to basically go online unfiltered and post nasty things about somebody else, and that certainly wouldn't have been the case when we didn't have social media. You'd actually have to go and print up a flyer or send mass mailings out, and that would have been costly. So there's been a seismic shift in defamation, or increased volume, I guess, of defamatory comments made on social media, and accordingly, a increase in cases involving these kinds of incidents. We should talk, I guess, a little bit about what this case is about in terms of filling it in.
Yeah, but before we leave that point, I think that it's this, you know, it's always defamation law, goes way back, of course, to, it comes out of the British common law. In fact, it was a criminal offense at one point in time to defame people. You go to jail for it. And now, well, you said, well, theoretically, it's still under the criminal code. You're right. The fact of the matter is, though, that we've got some pretty old law trying to catch up with what is, as you point out, a quantum shift in the way people communicate, the way people obtain and disseminate information. The whole concept of what media is has completely changed. And you've got old law trying to catch up with new technology and deal with it, and the application of the old rules to the new frontier of social media. And one thing you can say, regardless of what you think of mainstream media or traditional journalism, there was a bit of a check and a balance in traditional journalism and mainstream media. They were professionals in the sense that they were reporters. If you worked for a newspaper, the newspaper was a significant institution. It had some gravitas. It had a reputation to protect. These days, everybody's a newspaper, everybody's a broadcaster, everybody owns basically a TV station that they could broadcast to the whole world through. So the whole paradigm, if you will, of media has been completely turned on its head, in the sense that everybody now is a producer, broadcaster, journalist, and can say whatever they like, and unfortunately, with very little in the way of editorial standards.
Right, there's no check and balance except yourself.
Sometimes that one doesn't work. And this is a pretty good case in point. So this case, just to give everybody, our listeners, a quick background, this case involved it's really three people that were involved in it. Primarily, there was a doctor, anchor, and his wife, and a social media influencer. And I apologize if I'm going to mispronounce this. I believe her last name was Imaka. Her first name was Rosemary, so I will call her Rosemary. She was a popular social media influencer in the specifically Nigerian community in Edmonton, Alberta. The plaintiffs, who were the subject of some of her rather nasty comments, were also of Nigerian background. They were originally were friends and had a rather unusual habit where the defendant, Rosemary, liked to borrow clothes from the female plaintiff. The friendship soured when Rosemary expressed to the female plaintiff that she was of the view that the male plaintiff, Dr. Anchor, had less than platonic intentions towards her. I thought she was hot stuff, according to Rosemary. Mrs. Anchor did not appreciate that one bit. The relationship soured. The manifested in the non-return of the borrowed clothing, which continued to agitate the situation. So not only was the suggestion that her husband wanted her, but I'm not giving your clothes back either, that proceeded to turn into a very nasty series of posts by Rosemary about the female plaintiff and her husband that accused them of a number of fairly nefarious activities and motivations.
Well, and they also got involved in restraining orders against one another. There was litigation over the borrowed clothing. A lawsuit was started there to have that clothing returned. What was it? $8,500 worth of clothing that was borrowed?
I haven't seen I haven't seen too many used clothes lawsuits, but there you go.
But it all went downhill because of a comment from Rosemary, or Imaka, I guess is her name, first name, saying that the male plaintiff, who was a doctor, was sexually interested in her. She said that to the doctor's wife, and I guess the doctor's wife certainly didn't take that kindly. And then Imaka went through her series of posts on Instagram to her Nigerian community, calling the female plaintiff a witch, which was a criminal offense in the Nigerian community. Then for saying that the male plaintiff was sexually interested in her. Said that he was actually a sexually frustrated homosexual. So that doesn't make a lot of sense. But anyway,
yeah, and that the marriage was a sham, and that he was a physician, and that he was guilty of medical malpractice. He was conducting his practice, his medical practice, inappropriately, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it went on and on. It went on and on. It was a concerted media blitz, if you will, of this plaintiff and her husband, at least according to the judgment.
Yeah, that's certainly, it's a laundry list of, two dozen defamatory statements or allegations. Some were just plain insults. And so this case is very good. In terms of serving as a bit of a legal education on the issue of defamation, right? Defamation has to lower your reputation in the minds of somebody else. And there are statements that constitute defamation, certainly alleging somebody is guilty of a criminal offense is defamatory, suggesting that somebody is unprofessional. as was done here by accusing the male plaintiff of engaging in medical malpractice, impacting his profession. Those statements are defamatory. But, you know, I think there were other statements where basically the social media influencer accused the female plaintiff of having a low IQ. That's an insult. That's not, insults are not defamatory. So the distinction there is important. And so from that perspective, excuse me, is certainly a lesson for those who follow the law of defamation. Now, the end result, quickly, in this lawsuit, is that the court found that the defamation had been made out with respect to a number of the postings on Instagram, and the female plaintiff was awarded $50,000, and the doctor, the male plaintiff, was awarded $75,000. So, you know, not insignificant sums of money for all these postings.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's always interesting to me, and we see this, there's been a number of cases. I recall one case that got a significant amount of media attention in Ontario is the highest defamation award ever awarded by the court. And I think for our listeners, the lawyers will know this for sure, but the listeners who aren't lawyers, I mean, we see these huge damage awards that are often granted by courts, including this case. And what's important, I think, to remember here was this was, as I read the case, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that this case was undefended in the sense that, yeah, the plaintiff wasn't, I mean, the plaintiff was there telling their side of the story with no defense on the other side and no argument on the other side in terms of either liability or damage. So, I mean, that to me is always telling. When a defendant doesn't defend a claim like this, and one of the main reasons why people don't defend claims is because they don't care, because they don't have any money. One of the key factors of any judgment, and I think everyone who's ever dealing with litigation has to look at this issue and must in a practical way, a judgment is a piece of paper. It's only as good as the person or entity that it is made against. So, you know, I have no idea whether this social media influencer, I mean, 16,000 followers on Instagram does not translate into having $150,000 in the bank that can be seized on a judgment. So I wonder if how much of this has ever been collected, just like the other case I was thinking about that was the highest damage award in history, which was basically against an internet troll who the evidence indicated was just some guy posting out of their basement, or not even their, out of their rented basement. So, I mean, what's the point of all these damage awards?
Well, you make a good point there, Gavin. I can tell you that in a lot of recent cases that we see that involve social media defamation, a lot of them go undefended. And you know, I think you're right. At the end of the day, what does the plaintiff get out of it? You know, maybe the satisfaction of getting the award is one. But certainly in terms of collecting the damages at the end of the day, you know, that's a different matter. But I think what, you know, I'm certainly seeing, because like I said, we're following these defamation cases quite closely lately, is that courts are willing to give higher awards now based on the fact that the defamation is occurring over social media. So people really need to be careful when they make comments about others or even post on Google reviews. You know, there's, I think it's called Home Stars you know, that keep keep reviews of businesses that, you know, do home renovations and that kind of thing. If you're posting a negative review, you better have the facts right. You know, you can't just post a something on these review chat boards and you know, basically negatively impact somebody's business. Those posts go to the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's absolutely right. And I mean, what we see a lot, I think, is that there are collateral reasons why these postings are made. They oftentimes, one of the cases I've been involved in is a negative review was posted because it was a squabble about the bill. And then so the customer created a whole fictitious issue to post on it as some sort of leverage to deal with their account. And similarly, I mean, this always raises to my mind, I mean, you know, not to be flip about it, but you know, anyone who's got the time and the energy to be spending their life writing nasty things about somebody on the internet, the immediate question that pops in my mind is, don't they have anything better to do with their time? And I suppose the short answer is no, they don't. And that if they don't have anything better to do with their time, the likely result is they don't have any assets either.
Perhaps, you know, it's reminds me of a old adage, and I might not get it right or it might not be perfect, but it's, you know, something like, if you don't have anything nice to say about somebody, then don't say it.
That, well, listen, if that were true, I think you've just evaporated about 99% of social media. Certainly the business model for Elon Musk and X was gone out the window if it was just nice things to be said. I think you would have a hard time finding anything.
Because people can't control themselves, right?
Yeah.
It's like what you in an era of non-social media had in your mind, and you could basically, you know, talk to maybe a friend or talk to the wall or talk to yourself about it. Gee, now I can sit there on the computer and say, okay, I'm going to talk about it. And I'm going to hit the send button, and now everybody knows what I'm thinking. Right. The days of private thought are almost gone in that regard.
No, but it's also this, you know, I have to say, I sound like an old, grumpy old guy at the moment, but I also think that it's part of this incredible vanity that we as a society have sort of manifested in terms of social media, that like, people posting this stuff as if somebody cares what they think, and like flattering themselves to think that, oh, well, my opinion is also so informed and important that everyone's going to want to hear it. I mean, really? Does anybody really care what you think of? The latest has been, I suppose the latest pinata on social media has been Taylor Swift, given the great success of the Kansas City Chiefs and her very high profile. She's pretty high profile, that's for sure. It's hard to think of anybody more high profile, but she's got herself the equivalent of the modern day equivalent, in my view, of like the Posh Spice and David Beckham couple. And boy, are they getting pilloried just like they did. You know, does anybody really care what you think of Taylor Swift? Let me ask you, does Taylor Swift really care what you think of her? Probably not.
Probably not, as long as she's rolling in the dough.
And she certainly is. She certainly is. So, I mean, I think that one of the things everyone on social media, it's pretty hard to be reflective of this point. If you've gotten to the point where you're posting comments on everything, I guess you do think people care what you think.
I just think everybody wants to be, look, you know, you want to be like Donald Trump almost. If he's saying what's ever on his mind, I'd like to be able to say what's on my mind too.
Yeah, I suppose.
We're all influenced by that.
Well, and I guess that's the point. I guess it's an interesting term, that the term influencer. There is some suggestion of superiority in being an influencer over those who are influenced. I mean, it reminds me of the old saying of, what do all leaders have in common? Followers. So the short answer is that I suppose there's some aggrandizement in considering yourself an influencer or a leader, that other people are influenced by and follow, and therefore you somehow raise your stature. But I wonder, it just seems so illusory and so phony in terms of much of this.
Look, I look at it this way, Gavin. There's no doubt that certain people can turn social media into a income. And so a lot of people have seen that others have been successful of that. You know, we've got Steve Dangle, Mr. Hockey, all of a sudden is on TV, starts a YouTube channel or whatever to talk about hockey, and he does it very loudly, and he does it in a very opinionated fashion, and all of a sudden he rises to be somebody who has influence and knows something about the game of hockey. And so people see that, and they want to copy that.
Yeah, I suppose that there's an attraction to the louder the clang, or the more glistening the comment or blistering it is, the more unfiltered it is. There is almost an appetite or the public or the people who are following want to see just make it raw and raw and raw and less filtered and less filtered and more outrageous all the time for pure entertainment value. That is frankly probably a way to attract followers to your particular site. I mean, I think that it almost encourages, if you will, this hyperbolic approach to commentary and to insulting and to criticizing everything. I mean, because that's what people want to hear, and you got to give the people what they want.
Well, it's for some, it's a form of entertainment. It might be presented more as a comedy hour of some type, and I don't have to pay to go to a club to listen to comedy. I'd rather have unfiltered comments. They're maybe sometimes funnier than a shtick that's put together and written. I mean, we saw that in an award show recently, as far as I'm concerned, was not a very good effort by the host there in terms of comedy. But anyway, let's get back to the issue. Let's get back to
well, the point of the matter
here, is that shock value.
No, you better be. Yeah, it's not shocking enough. But the point of the matter is, I think with this case is that entertainment. There is a price to be paid when you go over the line. And I don't know what Rosemary had, as I say, in the way of assets. I don't know how real this judgment is. I'm always skeptical by those who, if you're not defending the cookie jar, the general reason is because you got no cookies. So the short answer, no defense here, but a judgment totaling $125,000, not exactly small, for indulging oneself in a rant, calling another your ex-friend a witch, and other nasty things. It wasn't cheap to do that.
No, and look, I mentioned earlier in the podcast that this case is educational, and I think part of our podcast, Gavin, is to provide a bit of legal education to folks, whether they're lawyers, law students, or just members from the general public. But in a case of damages, there are a lot of things to keep in mind. First, damages are presumed. I don't need to prove actual harm. All I need to prove is that the comments could lower my reputation. Then the size of the damages award is dependent on a number of factors. The plaintiff's position and standing in society, the seriousness of the defamatory statements, the mode of the publication, the absence of any retraction or apology, and the overall conduct. The stature of the defendant is important in an overall award. So all of those factors get taken into account, and you see in this case, damages awards that are not relatively insignificant because of the one stature of the male plaintiff as a doctor, a professional, right? When you lower a professional's reputation, high damages award. You talked about that Hill versus Church of Scientology case, which I think the total damages was something in the neighborhood of $1.6 million. And that case is now 20, 30 years old, I guess. And there have been other cases involving professionals where you have high damages awards. You have cases where the stature of the defendant is extremely important to a damages award. CBC has had significant damages awards made against it for for defamatory publication over their TV programs in a number of cases, and that has influenced the courts. They've said it. If CBC says it, or if somebody of a high stature says something defamatory, it's more believable.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that the courts will ascribe a higher degree of what I'll call patent credibility in terms of mainstream media sources than they will over some, you know, crackpot on the internet. But I think that's changing. And I think that the audience, the fact that, for example, this particular individual had the 16,000 followers means that they were someone who, you know, had a significant following, who people, for whatever reason, listened to and wanted to listen to and were following this person for a reason. So,
and,
you know,
and that, specifically within that community.
Right, right. It was a targeted character assassination, if you will, within a very small pond. So she was a big fish, 16,000 followers in a, you know, in the Nigerian community of Edmonton would have been a pretty large percentage of that community. And I think you get into this whole relativism in terms of, as you point out, the sting of the libel is a function of, you know, how vulnerable is the reputation of the plaintiff versus how much power does the defendant have in order to criticize, and how much credibility do they necessarily have, and how much injury will that correlation of those two things cause? And that's what the court has to assess. So, yeah, not an insignificant damage award in the context of a defamation case for what seems to be, you know, fairly silly comments.
Look, it's the bottom line at the end of the day is, you know, I hate to be preachy here, but I'm going to preach, I guess. Don't use social media to personally attack people. You know, I've had conversations, Gavin, with, you know, people who are close to me. You know, they go around, these young kids do it, you know, they think it's a fun thing to do, to rate restaurants and to rate food. And, oh, that was really terrible service. And then they post 1 stars on Google reviews for something that happened. And at the end of the day, you're impacting somebody's life by doing things like that. So show some restraint, show some integrity, show some responsibility. If you didn't like it, fine. You didn't like it, don't go back. You don't have to tell the world about your bad experiences all the time.
Well, we live in a world where everyone wants to share. So, unfortunately, I don't know that that's going to change
context,
anytime
though.
Soon. I guess your point is that, you know, only share the positive and keep the negative to yourself. Maybe sometimes there's also a social utility, I suppose, sometimes in advising and warning others of bad situations or bad experiences. There is a social utility in that to some extent. But I agree with you that it seems to the social media and the internet seems to have brought out and magnified some of the worst aspects of human nature. And maybe we ought to step back from it and understand that the virtual world of social media has an impact in the real world that we all live in every day. And that's really where the law comes into play in terms of governing people's behavior in the real world and putting a price tag on those who go on the wrong side of it. As was the case here for the internet defamer in Edmonton. So with that, I think we're going to close up for today, Stephen. But thanks very much. Always an interesting and exciting discussion. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to this podcast. Really appreciate your time and hope you enjoyed it. And, you know, please give us a rating if you can. You know, and please keep Stephen's comments in mind when rating us. I keep the negative to yourself, only kidding. And always remember that if no one is above the law, then everyone is beneath it. And that includes you, internet trolls. Until next time.